Good morning. How are you all today? I'm Stephen Alstead with Shooters Committee on Political Education in New York. And when I travel around the country and tell people I'm from New York, invariably, people assume that I'm from New York City. I actually live in a very small town in western New York. When I say small town, in the entire township, we don't have a traffic signal, a gas station, or even a single fast food restaurant in our town. The vast majority of New York is actually very rural and tends to be fairly conservative. The New York State Legislature, on the other hand, is dominated by the New York City liberals. The New York State Assembly is overwhelmingly liberal, anti-gun, and every year they pass a whole slew of anti-gun bills. Like this year, once again, they passed the micro-stamping bill for all pistols. We've been able to hold them off in the New York State Senate. Right now, the Senate Republicans hold a narrow 32-30 majority, and the majority leadership in the Senate has been pretty resolute in keeping the anti-gun bills blocked up in committee. Similar to national trends, there are pro-gun Democrats, although they do tend to be a minority in their party. Anti-gun Republicans are a little bit more rare, and it's really as much about geography as anything else. Republicans don't tend to get elected in the cities, and anti-gun Democrats don't tend to get elected upstate. I have a map here. I'm sure you probably can't see it from the back, but this just shows the makeup of the New York State Senate. 30 Democrats, 3 upstate, all the rest around New York City area. Whereas if you look at the makeup of the Republicans in New York State, you can see they're widely dispersed across New York State. This is going to be a very important election year in New York. If the Republicans cannot maintain the majority in the Senate, then the Democratic leadership has a whole laundry list of anti-gun bills that they're looking to pass. They introduced a number of bills right after the recent Colorado shooting. Now they want to make bans on standard capacity magazines, ammo bans, bans on 50 caliber rifles, you name it. If the Republicans lose the Senate, they're likely to get these bills through. And Andrew Cuomo has actually, the governor Andrew Cuomo has indicated that gun control bills are going to be a legislative priority next year. The fly in our ointment is this, is last year, New York State passed a gay marriage bill. 4 of our Senate Republicans voted for that bill. Now, the biggest, most influential third party in New York State may surprise you is actually the New York State Conservative Party. They have decided that these 4 senators should be taken out of office, and they're going after them. So far, one of them has decided not to run again. One lost his primary. One narrowly won a primary. And he's actually the chairman of the Senate Codes Committee, where the majority of these bills get stopped. Narrowly won his primary. The other one, who comfortably won his primary, now is facing a 3-way election against a Democrat and a Conservative Party candidate. The Conservative Party candidate is not likely to win. He can't win, but he could possibly take enough votes away from the Republican so the Democrat could win, tip the balance back in favor to the Democratic Party. This could be very dangerous and could make a big difference. Last time the Democrats had all 3 branches of state government was in 2008, when the same thing happened on a national level. Fortunately, at that time, the Democratic leadership in the state was fairly inept, first led by Elliot Spitzer, who self-destructed in a prostitution scandal. I'm sure you've all heard about that. And then after that, we had Governor David Patterson. David Patterson was considered pretty inept at his position, even by members of his own party. Andrew Cuomo, in contrast, is no David Patterson. He's a very astute political operator, and if he wants to get something done, and he's got the majority in both houses, it's likely to get done. One thing I should mention that we did have a success in this last year is we had a COBIS, or Combined Ballistic Identification System, in New York since the year 2000. We spent $4 to $5 million on it every year, and in that entire time, the system did not result in one arrest or conviction. We finally got that eliminated from state law through the budget process. So we did have a success there. I just want to say one more thing. In the last five years, we've had a Sportsman's Day organized at the state capitol. We bust in people, thousands of people from all over the state. We filled up our legislative office building with gun owners, hunters, sportsmen. And I'm telling you, it makes a real difference. Prior to us starting to do this, every year the New York State Assembly would come out. They would pass a dozen bills at a time, anti-gun bills, have big press conference about all their anti-gun bills. Since we've been doing this, they still occasionally pass an anti-gun bill in the assembly, but they do it quietly. They try not to get people all aroused. So get your people involved, get them organized, get them to your state capitol. It makes a difference. Thank you.
Hello and good morning, everyone. Normally, Jim Wallace, a lot of you will probably remember Jim. Jim usually does this for the state of Massachusetts, but he's unable to make it this year, and I'm sure he will be back next year. And if everyone remembers what Jim looks like, I have big pants to fill, and I'm about 20 pounds away, so we're good. So Massachusetts has two, just to orient you, my name is Thomas Bolioli, and I'm from Commonwealth Second Amendment. I represent one of the two gun rights organizations in Massachusetts. The nice thing about these two gun rights organizations is one is dedicated solely to legislation, the other is dedicated solely to litigation, and that works very well. However, I'm here to talk to you about legislation and how we're doing as gun owners in Massachusetts against the legislature. And I actually have some good news for you. In the last 2 years, Goal and the Massachusetts gun owners have been able to beat back pretty much most of the gun legislation brought out by the anti-gun lobby in Massachusetts, which is by far a huge credit to the effort of Goal and the Massachusetts gun owners. This is not an environment that you can beat back anti-gun legislation very easily, but we've been able to do it. Save a few smaller examples. I'll give you a good example of one of the gun laws we've been able to beat back, one gun a month. We have registration in Massachusetts. We have a permitting process that requires months and months before you can actually even purchase a firearm. Yet they believe that one gun a month was going to change everything. So we were able to beat back that legislation. But the interesting thing about that legislation is it had a lot of small little ancillary amendments to it that would have significantly altered the scope of gun rights in Massachusetts. There's a lot of laws in the books in Massachusetts, but mass gun owners have very smartly and very adeptly adapted to the environment and been able to find quote-unquote loopholes in order to continue to exercise our fundamental right. And so that law had a lot of those little bits in there to cut down on the quote-unquote loopholes. So it was a very important bill to stop, and we were able to stop it. And I think that's, again, all the hard work that Massachusetts gun owners and Goal have been able to do. In the last session, we actually had a right to carry bill that made it to the floor. In Massachusetts, this is unheard of. In Massachusetts, pro-gun bills don't make it out of committee. Not only did this make it out of one committee, it made it out of two others and made it to the floor. Now, it was not voted on. The session expired before the time it was voted on. However, this is a huge, huge success for us. We, in Massachusetts, we think small. And these small successes are actually a big step for us. Massachusetts hasn't been heavily organized in the past, but it's changing. So we also had a stand your ground bill, but unfortunately the Zimmerman issue occurred, and that was dead on arrival, but that's understandable, especially in an environment like Massachusetts. Gun owners are starting to get much more organized and going after the state reps in their districts. There's a good example of a pro-gun challenger to a Democratic incumbent. She's been so successful at putting pressure on the Democratic incumbent coming up to this election that the Democratic incumbent actually filed charges against her that she was a drug dealer. And she was so specific in her charges that they were easily refuted very quickly. But this has been this is the amount of pressure that gun owners are starting to put on incumbent legislatures who are anti-gun. And so this is, again, another success in Massachusetts. Small, little bitty steps, but we're getting there. And her name, by the way, is Susanna Whips Lee, if anyone wants to know, and that's Franklin's 2nd District. So, and one last piece of information on the litigation front. We're actually starting to see successes there. The first law to be overturned in Massachusetts as a gun control law occurred this year. We actually had a win in a federal district court, and we were able to overturn a Massachusetts gun law, or a portion of thereof. This was a huge success in Massachusetts. So this is basically the lay of the land in Massachusetts as far as gun rights and legislative successes. So, thank you.
Good morning. Don Moran, president of the Illinois State Rifle Association. The Illinois State Rifle Association was founded in 1903 as a competitive shooting organization. In 1967, we had legislation that came across that to pass a thing called the Firearm Owner's Identification Card, and we found that at that point we needed to get involved in lobbying our legislature. In 2007, we started getting involved in litigation because even though we had lobbyists down in our state capitol, we found that that wasn't totally effective in trying to reverse what's going on in the gun control movement in Illinois for eons. So in 2007, we filed a lawsuit against Cook County called Wilson versus Cook County, which attacked their assault weapon ban. This case has been before the Illinois Supreme Court twice, both times remanded back to Chancery and Circuit Court in Cook County, and that's where it's at again today. We were involved in a case called People versus Diggins, which was, we filed an amicus brief. Mr. Diggins was arrested. Small steps like in Massachusetts. In Illinois, we have no provision for open carry or for concealed carry. You can have an unloaded firearm in a case that's immediately accessible everywhere but Chicago. Mr. Diggins got pinched for having a unloaded firearm in the console of his car, and he was arrested, convicted. It was appealed, and we were involved in a an amicus brief on that case when it went before the Illinois Supreme Court. He won the case. You can now carry an unloaded firearm in the console of your car. A follow-on to that was another case that came along a couple years later where we ended up getting glove compartments also, which you would think would be a natural progression. McDonald versus Chicago, we were involved in that case as a plaintiff with the Second Amendment Foundation. I heard that Otis is doing better last night, and we're thankful for that. Otis is a true American in every way, and we're proud to be friends of his and supporters. Right now we're involved in Ezel versus Chicago, a case that was a follow-on from McDonald. When McDonald was won, the city of Chicago went back and passed an ordinance prohibiting shooting ranges in the city, even though their new ordinance required you to have 4 hours of regular training, an hour of training on a range in order to register a firearm in the city. So we're attacking that with the Second Amendment Foundation. Last year we sued the Illinois State Police. The Associated Press filed the Freedom of Information Act asking for the information related to the FOID card in Illinois, which is a firearm owner's identification card that everybody has to have in order to have a firearm or to buy ammunition. We sued the state police, asked for a temporary restraining order against them and the AP, preventing them from getting that information. Then our lobbyists kicked in, got the legislature to pass a bill protecting that information from FOIAs. And then when that happened, when the legislation passed, the AP dropped out of the suit, and we were able to negotiate a settlement with the ISP that turned into a permanent restraining order against the ISP for ever releasing the FOID card information or the FTIP information, which goes beyond what the legislation did. We have an attorney referral program in Illinois where we have 50 law firms throughout the state. If somebody gets a problem with a firearm-related issue, they call our office. We refer them to our general counsel. Our general counsel gives it to an attorney in their area that specializes in that sort of law on a rotational basis. Last year, right after the Gun Rights Policy Conference in Chicago, we sponsored a legal seminar at John Marshall Law School, where we paired up Second Amendment attorneys with Section 1983 civil rights attorneys to discuss ways that we could work together to move the ball. We have House Bill 148, our shall issue bill for concealed carry in Illinois. We're a couple votes short of passing that due to a parliamentary procedure by our speaker. We passed a ammunition intrastate mail order ammunition bill this year through both houses, which our governor issued an amendatory veto on and turned it into an assault weapon ban, and that's beyond his scope. what he's allowed to do. He can make technical changes, but he can't substitute the entire language of a bill. We're trying to decide what to do with that. We think we can override a veto. And at the 2 weeks after the governor did that, we passed last year a short-barreled rifle bill in Illinois. If you are a member of a bona fide national reenactors organization and you have a curios and relics license, you can buy and possess a short-barreled rifle. Of course, you have to go through the ATF to get all the approved paperwork and all that. This year, we took that bill and we stripped out the reenactors part. So all you have to have is a curio and relics license, and you can own a short-barreled rifle in Illinois. Once again, it passed both houses with overwhelming majorities, and the governor signed that bill 2 weeks after he signed an assault weapon, or after he substituted an assault weapon ban language into his mandatory veto. So they obviously don't know the issues. They don't understand the issues. They continue to try and legislate it, and we're going to keep fighting for everybody's rights, and thank you very much.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Tony Montanarella. I'm the president of the California Rifle and Pistol Association and also of the California Rifle and Pistol Association Foundation. You know, whenever I come to a state like Florida, I always feel like I should have to ask for political asylum when I get here. But I bring you good news from behind the Iron Curtain known as California. Basically, what I'm going to talk about very briefly, Julianne, I promise, is the good and bad and the ugly of what we have going in California, because as you all are aware, especially when it comes to gun rights, we have a lot of challenges in the so-called Golden State. Some of the challenges that we have, and I'm not going to get into all the litigation and cases and stuff like that, because there's a whole bunch of them, and we would be here for hours, and Julianne would give me the hook. So Let me just touch on a couple of realities that we deal with in California and why we struggle so mightily in the state is the California legislature is pretty much a completely dysfunctional organization. And one of the reasons it's so dysfunctional is because you have literally a very small number of liberal Democrats from primarily the Bay Area, San Francisco, and Los Angeles who control all the key committees and who run everything. Now, these are people who do not even believe that police officers and law enforcement officers should have guns. That's how extreme these people are. And they control pretty much everything. And you're literally talking about maybe 20 people. What we find ourselves with is that if you want to get anything done in California, and yes, believe it or not, we actually have had some successes, is you need to work with Democrats. Now, there's a lot of Democrats, especially in the rural parts of California, we're very similar to New York in that respect, who are actually pro-gun. The problem is that if they vote for pro-gun bills, then the liberal chairmen of some of these committees will give them a dark, dreary office someplace and literally ostracize them, and they will be put out into the political pasture. So what we need to do is basically reinforce to those Democrats, as long as they vote for us and vote with us, we will back their play and we will quote unquote protect them as much as we can. Now, we've actually been kind of successful in that endeavor. The other problem is even some of the Republicans that we have, Democrats control everything. The Republicans, they don't control anything. And the only reason that we have any success at all is because the Democrats don't have a supermajority. There's still a very, very thin line of Republicans that as long as we get one or two Democrats to vote with us, we can stop a lot of this stuff. But even a Republican in California is not the same as a Republican in Texas or in Oklahoma or in Florida, okay? There's a different kind of Republican, and unfortunately, the state Republican Party in California is pretty much a party in name only. It's until they get their act together, the Republican Party is going to be pretty much irrelevant in California for a very long time. So we find ourselves now having to work with, and a lot of times encourage our members to vote for Democrats. So it's a very interesting dynamics, but our organization, all we care about is gun rights. All we care about is the Second Amendment. That's all we care about. We don't care if you have a D after your name, an R after your name. It doesn't matter. As long as you're on our side, you have our support. We will encourage our people to vote for you and to support you. That's all we care about. Now, we have a lot of good things happening in California as well. For one thing, we have a very close relationship with the NRA, and they can't afford to cut off California. They have a lot of members in that state, and it's very important to them as it is for everybody else. The state is pretty much broke. They have no money, which means that anything that they want to do that's anti-gun, that's going to cost the state any money, is automatically dead on arrival. It won't happen just because the state doesn't have the money to do it. So believe it or not, the fact that the state is broke is a good thing if you're a gun owner in California. The other thing is that we actually have access to Governor Brown's office. Now, Governor Brown is a Democrat. However, I don't want to say he's pro-gun, but at least he will listen to us. We have access to the governor's office that we didn't have under Schwarzenegger. Maybe he was busy with the housekeeper. I don't know. But we didn't have the access to the governor's office that we do now. So there is hope in California. We're moving the ball ahead incrementally, and keep fighting the good fight. And just remember, whatever happens in California can happen in your state too. So stop it in California first. Thank you very much.
Oh, well, Massachusetts, New York, Illinois, California. I'm not sure what I'm doing up here. I represent Virginia. by the way, with the micro-stamping they were pushing in New York, I called overtures to Remington, to Colt, all those. Let's get them down here to Virginia where we'll appreciate them and their jobs. So we'll see where that goes. But the governor's office was pretty amenable to that. Yes, indeed, gun rights are moving forward in Virginia, but lately they've been a little bit slow on the bigger stuff. We don't have a lot of bigger stuff, but we do have some, and it's, again, mostly weak-kneed politicians that just, they move like they get rid of one gun a month, and then, boy, now that they felt like they've really done it for the next couple of years. And with an election cycle coming in, now they're really weak-kneed. But that's not an excuse as far as we're concerned, and we're going to keep pushing them hard on it. We do have a lobby day where we get 1,000 people to show up at the General Assembly. And let me tell you, it does work. We flood it with Gun Saves Lives stickers. Everywhere you walk in the General Assembly on Martin Luther King Day every year, all you see is orange guns. Very effective. We have a big rally, and what I've told our members to do for the last couple of years is when the antis hold their rally, we took all the good slots, so they have theirs way out in the afternoon when nobody's around, and I said, don't go to their rally. And that's because we magnified the size. I mean, we had like 1,000 people at our rally. They had like 25 to 50, somewhere in that ballpark. And when we stood around, the press would take a picture of that, and it looked like they had 500 people or something. So, but it's a very effective, that really does work. We've had no anti-gun bills passed in Virginia. I don't know, it's probably been a decade since they've gotten anything. It's great. They try, but they can't even get them out of committee. It's the back reverse of what you've been hearing in some of these other states. We're very, very fortunate in that effect. The House is controlled by Republicans. The Senate is a dead tie, but we have a Republican lieutenant governor, so boom, it was handed over to the Republicans there. Again, not that Republicans are always the perfect example of gun rights supporters, but we do have a majority in the House gun rights supporters, and so we're not too worried about gun control going anywhere. Local government tends to be the threat more than anything, where they want to put up signs in libraries. Well, we've got, for example, that's just one example, signs in libraries and parks. We've got total preemption. But so they try to put signs up that don't violate preemption, but they're confusing. So you don't know if you can carry. They'll have a sign that'll say, no guns in library except as authorized by law. It's like, what? Police don't know what that means. Citizens don't know what that means. We know we can carry there. So we have big protests. We had a protest at a library with all these people, press everywhere, because the press love this. You contact the press, say we're holding a protest in a library, and they're all over the place. We had every channel was there. And we said, we're here to educate the public that with this, it's not an illegal law, but it's a misleading. We want to make sure everybody knows that they can carry in libraries in Richmond. And we did that with parks. So that's a very effective thing. We get the press on our side. Let's see, police versus sheriffs had to come up earlier. Yeah, the sheriffs seem to really understand gun rights. Police answer to city councils, and we get all, you know, the chiefs of police, I just ignore them. They're just totally anti-gun. They're a very different group of people than the organizations of sheriffs. Let's see, stand your ground laws have been, you've seen those going across the nation. Virginia had a push for this as well. We have it in common law. We've got excellent stand your ground laws already, but it's in common law, so people can't look it up. The Grim Reaper's coming. we actually had to kill a bill because it actually unintentionally weakened the very good laws that we have. But we're going to try and codify stand your ground laws, and we're going to push hard on university carry. Universities have a lot of money, and they've got a lot of influence, but we're going to go up against them, and we're going to keep fighting, and we're holding rallies on campuses. The anti showed up. Hardly anybody was there for them. We should have seen all the gun slaves live stickers at Virginia Tech and all the people coming over to cheer our side. So, again, these protest rallies, you'll get the press out there, and even if the press doesn't cover you very well, I'll tell you what, any press is better than no press, and it keeps the issues out there. And we found in Virginia this works very well. So while I'm still alive, I want to thank you and appreciate being out here.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Now we are going to have the